Lynn Hiles Ministries presents Dr. Lynn Hiles, That You Might Have Life. And here's your host, Dr. Lynn Hiles.
Welcome back to the program again this week. I trust you are tuning in every week because we have been building and teaching a series titled Revelation Revisited, and we're dealing with in the last week and this week and probably a couple of weeks, the 13th chapter of Revelation, which is probably one of the most preached when it's dealing with the beast, his number, and his mark. And what we have tried to show you, I think consistently, is that there is a striking resemblance between the beast of Daniel chapter 7, the beast of Daniel chapter 2, not only a striking resemblance, but almost irrefutable evidence that this beast in Revelation 13 is the same beast of Daniel chapter 7. And what I showed you last week, and I really, really, really encourage you to go back and read Daniel chapter 7, or go back, not just read it in the Amplified Bible, but go back and watch last week's video, because what we did last week is we read from the first part of Revelation 13, and we read part of Daniel chapter 7. We read the whole chapter of Daniel chapter 7, and we talked about the land beast, because the beast, the beast of Daniel, especially when you read it in the Amplified edition of the Bible, will give you the historic backdrop. Now, all scholars pretty much agree on these four beasts. Well, it's not only the scholars. You can find it in the scriptures where the first beast that Daniel was dealing with is, it's Babylon, because the children of Israel were carried away into captivity by the Babylonians into exile. And then the Medo-Persian kingdom came on the scene under Darius the Mede and Artaxerxes, and some of these kings came on the scene. That's the period of time in which Esther was standing before the king and pleading for the life of the Jews. Then after that would arise Alexander the Great, the Greeks, and then the fourth empire that would be in the earth would be the Roman Empire, according to Daniel chapter number 2. And the fourth kingdom on earth was the kingdom that was in power when Jesus, the Messiah, comes on the scene. And the beast that was about to rise up from the sea to bring the destruction to Jerusalem and to the city and to the temple was the Roman Empire. And it was coming up out of the sea because they lived in, if you look at it on the map, you can see they came up out of the sea. But also, the sea can speak of great chaos and agitation. The agitation and the sea of humanity that is stirred up and great strife is stirred up in the midst of it. And out of that emerges this sea beast, first of all. And then there's a land beast that comes along later on and it gives its power and strength. And that's where Judaism and the Old Covenant and the scribes and Pharisees begin to give their power to the beast. And it looked like a lamb, but it talked like a dragon. And then this whole alignment between these beasts began to give great persecution to the church, to begin to make war with the Lamb and to make war with the saints. And the scripture tells us that they would be given into the hand of the beast for times and a half a time, or 3.5 years. And if you go back and look at the charts that I used earlier in this series, when we showed you on the chart that the last part of the scope of the prophecy that Jesus talked about, when great tribulation would come, such as was not, was the 3.5 years, the 42 months, the times and a half a times, that the Romans would siege the city. And you can find reference for that both in Daniel chapter 7, in the book of Habakkuk, and also in Daniel chapter 12, talks about that period of time and wish the beast would wear out the saints. And the beast was the beast of Rome, and they were being persecuted, but they would be given into his hands only for a short time, but that the ultimate victory would come from the Lamb and from his army. And you can see we're not going to stop. The book of Revelation does not end with a beast. The book of Revelation does not end in chapter 13. As a matter of fact, the very next chapter says, "And I saw a lamb stand on Mount Zion, and with him 144,000, which were the first fruits to the lamb." And it's really a repeat of the seventh chapter of the book of Revelation, where you saw 144,000. This book is really kind of repeated in several different ways. You see the first seven chapters being the victory of the Lamb, culminating in chapter 7 with 12,000 from every tribe and nation and tongue. And then you see 144,000 that are numbered there, that are the first fruits, excuse me. And you see them having the victory. And then it almost repeats us again, because it starts talking about the avenging of the blood of the martyrs and the trumpets that would sound. We're now coming to the end of the trumpets and the beginnings of the vials that are being poured out. And it's like it culminates with a lamb. It culminates with 144,000 in chapter 7 of Revelation, and a lamb that has the victory. It culminates in 14, seven chapters later, with a lamb standing on Mount Zion and 144,000 being numbered. It culminates again in Revelation chapter 21, where you see the city of God, you see the bride, the Lamb's wife, you see the victory, you see a city that's 12,000 cubits by 12,000 by 12,000. It's multiples of 12s, which is 144. And you can see that it's kind of like God is showing us the same pictures from different perspectives. And so you can kind of see what's happening here. But in this segment, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a chart that I made up comparing the Revelation 13 with Revelation 17 and Daniel chapter 7. Because, we don't have a chart where we could put it on the screen, but if you would like to get a copy of this chart, don't call the number that comes on the screen. You have to email us at info@lynhiles.com, and someone from my team will send you this chart. It's called an expanded comparative chart of Revelation 13, Revelation 17, and Daniel chapter 7. Now, in Revelation 13, the first thing I want you to see is that the description of the beast. The beast rises from the sea with seven heads and 10 horns, symbolizing kingdoms and blasphemous power. And I showed you that this beast from the sea was the same one that you see in, well, we'll see this as we compare this. Revelation chapter 13, this is the description of the beast. The woman sits on a beast, a scarlet-colored beast with seven heads and 10 horns, symbolizing kings and kingdoms under Satan's power. So Revelation 13 and Revelation 17 are good comparisons. Let's see if we can find that in Daniel 7. Daniel 7 says the fourth beast is dreadful and terrible with 10 horns and strong iron teeth, represents a kingdom that devours the whole earth, Rome, or another empire. This puts in there, as I did some research, in other words, it's representing Rome. The 10 horns, all of these have 10 horns. I'm just going to show you what we have as striking comparisons. In Revelation 13, the beast has 10 horns, symbolizing 10 kings or rulers who receive power with the beast. In Revelation chapter 17, the scarlet beast has 10 horns, which are 10 kings receiving power briefly with the beast. And Daniel chapter 7, we see 10 horns or 10 kings arising out of the fourth beast's kingdom, symbolizing strength and political power. Then you find every one of them dealing with blasphemy. In Revelation 13, you see the beast and its heads are full of blasphemous names. It speaks blasphemies against God. You see in Revelation 17, the scarlet beast is full of blasphemous names, and the woman represents a corrupt system against God. In the book of Daniel, chapter 7, the little horn speaks great and blasphemous words against the Most High, challenging divine authority. So all of those texts are striking comparisons. They all speak blasphemies. All the beasts have 10 horns. All the beasts have 7 heads and 10 horns. All of the beasts we find persecuting the saints. You'll see the persecution of the saints in Revelation, the 13th chapter. It says the beast makes war with the saints and overcomes them, leading to their oppression and martyrdom. Revelation 17, the woman is drunk with the blood of the saints and martyrs, symbolizing persecution of the believers. And Daniel chapter 7, where it was prophesied, the little horn makes war with the saints and prevails against them, wearing out the saints until the judgment. So you see Daniel prophesying these things. You see them fulfilled in the book of Revelation. You cannot keep stretching prophecies out for thousands of years hoping they will be repeated. One of the things that's made me a believer in the Scriptures is the fact that somebody like Daniel could prophesy with striking accuracy what would occur during the time of this final kingdom, which was Rome. And that this was prophesied and now fulfilled in the book of Revelation. If you were a first century Jew and these letters were written to you, you would probably have a pretty good clue what's happening if you had read the book of Daniel. Now, the Romans may not have understood that, but the Jews and the educated scribes, Pharisees, and teachers should have known that these are fulfillments of what Daniel prophesied would come to pass in the latter days. And it actually uses that terminology in Daniel chapter 2 in the latter days. The latter days of what? The last days of the old covenant, not the last days of a cosmic collapse, but the last days of a covenant. Then we're going to compare the rulers and kings. There are 10 kings who receive power with the beast in Revelation 13 and give their authority to the beast for a short time. Revelation 17, the 10 horns are 10 kings, and they will give their power to the beast and align themselves against the Lamb. In Daniel chapter 7, the 10 horns represent 10 kings. A little horn arises and subdues 3 kings as it speaks great things and persecutes the saints. So again, we see a striking resemblance of these rulers and kings. Then you see in Revelation 13, the beast has authority over all nations, tribes, and tongues, and the whole known world worships the beast. The woman and the beast rule in chapter 17 of Revelation, the woman and the beast rule over many nations and peoples, influencing multitudes and exercising global domination or dominion over the known kingdoms of the world. It was the main power in the earth. Then in Daniel chapter 7, when Daniel prophesied about this, he said the 10 horns represent 10 kings. A little horn arises and subdues 3 kings as it speaks great things and persecutes this. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm reading from the wrong part of my notes. In Daniel 7, the fourth beast devours the whole earth, stamping out other nations and exercising great global power and influence, world power. All of them, this is all consistent again with them, judgment and destruction. In Revelation 13, it's like there's no immediate judgment yet, but it'll come as you see this thing unfold. No immediate judgment of the beast in Revelation 13. However, the beast's reign is temporary, and he will be judged. In Revelation chapter 17, the beast and the woman, Babylon, will be judged and destroyed. The kings turn on the woman, and the beast goes into perdition. In Daniel chapter 7, the beast is slain, and the little horn is judged, and his body destroyed in fire, and judgment is given to the saints who possess the kingdom forever. And you will see again that this fire is what devours this beast in Revelation chapter 7. Then there's war against the Lamb. In Revelation 13, the beast in Revelation 13. He makes war with the saints and prevails against them temporarily. In Revelation 17, the kings and beasts make war with the Lamb, but the Lamb overcomes them as the King of kings and Lord of lords. In Daniel's prophecy, the little horn makes war with the saints and prevails for a time until the judgment comes and the saints receive the everlasting kingdom. And in the book of Revelation, the beast has a mouth speaking blasphemous things. And this is in the 13th chapter. The beast has a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies against God for 42 months. In the book of Revelation, chapter 17, there's no explicit mention of the woman or the beast exactly, in my notes, let me just read it like I have it in my notes. No explicit mention of the woman or beast speaking blasphemies, but they are filled with the names of blasphemy. So it's not a specific like they're speaking it, but they're full of the names of blasphemy. So once again, you see the striking resemblance. Daniel chapter 7, where this is prophesied, the little horn speaks great words against the Most High, challenging God's sovereignty and persecuting his people. Once again, there are striking resemblances to show you that the beast from the sea is the Roman Empire that was in power during the time of the persecution of the church after the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus, where the gospel is being preached now by the apostles in about a 40-year transition period from 30 AD to 70 AD, and now it is coming to culmination as it is now time for the saints to possess the kingdom and win the ultimate victory, where the sword that's coming out of the mouth of the one seated on the horse, which to me speaks clearly of the gospel, because you see Hebrews, the 4th chapter, says the word of God is quick and powerful, sharper than any two-edged sword. You also see that same sword coming out of the mouth of the one who is described in Revelation as the one who walks in the midst of the seven candlesticks, that this victory is the ultimate victory of the gospel being preached and bringing an end to the reign of all of this corrupt idolatry and to the end of the old covenant with this woman in bed with this beast who is Rome and Jerusalem in cahoots together against the Lamb to make war against him. But the ultimate victory belongs to the Lamb. In Revelation chapter 13, you have economic control. The beast controls commerce, requiring all people to receive its mark to buy and sell, thus controlling the global economy. In chapter 17, the woman's wealth is connected to with economic influence over the nations as she is made rich by her fornications with the kings of the earth. In Daniel, there's no mention of economic control necessarily, but the little horn seeks to change laws and systems, potentially influencing global governance and economy. Now, let me tell you what happens a little bit here, and we'll get into this as we start to compare these horns. But the coin that was used for economic power had a picture of the Caesar on it, and it literally said, Caesar is Lord, or they worshiped that image. And even when Jesus challenged them in the temple, when he cast out the money changers, and he said, when they asked him, should we pay tribute to Caesar? He said, go get me a coin. And it was even during, I think, one of the times, if I'm not mistaken, when he was cleansing the temple and throwing out the money changers, they were using the coin of Rome, which would have violated the whole Mosaic commandment that says thou shalt have no graven images, but they were actually using the graven image of the emperor in temple exchanging the money, so that when Jesus says, bring me a coin, he says, whose superinscription is this? They said, this is Caesar's. And he says, give to God what is God's, and what is Caesar's, give it to Caesar. And, you know, I think about that in terms not only in the sense of money, but I think about in terms of the sense that you and I are the image and likeness of God. And so when he says, give to Caesar what's Caesar's and God what's God's, he's telling us and challenging us, let us be the true representation of the Lamb and of his nature in the earth, because we're God's image bearers in the earth. And what we're called to do as the true temple of God, hallelujah, is to resemble his image. But the buying and selling had to do with that. And, you know, that was the money that was used. Without it, you couldn't buy or sell in the marketplaces without some form. They made you worship sometimes an image of the beast. They burned incense to the statue of Caligula and of Nero, and they would take the ashes and put, you know, I understand that they would put a mark on their head or their hand. Potentially, I don't know that I can draw the resource from that, so you can take that or leave that, but I know that they did set up a statue and force the people to worship the image of these beasts. And even Nero called himself a beast. We'll get into that when we get to the chart of the Caesars here in a little bit. But the little horn seeks to change times, laws, and seasons. It has to do with economic control. But then you find in the this next part would be the dominion of the saints. In the 13th chapter of Revelation, the saints are oppressed by the beast, but ultimate victory and judgment are implied elsewhere in the book of Revelation. Revelation 17 is where the Lamb, Jesus Christ, ultimately defeats the beast and the kings, and those with him are chosen and faithful. In the book of Daniel, you see in Daniel chapter 7, the saints possess the kingdom forever. After the beast is judged and destroyed, the Ancient of Days gives them dominion. You know, I think it would be interesting to note here that since Daniel prophesied that the beast is judged and destroyed and the Ancient of Days gives them dominion, it would be interesting to note, although I have mentioned it before in this series, that one of the things that Jesus quotes when he's standing before Caiaphas, when Caiaphas says, tell us plainly, are you the Christ? He said, and from henceforth you will see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. He calls himself the Son of Man because he's quoting Daniel chapter 7, where he receives the kingdom. And the kingdom and the dominion are ultimately given to the saints of the Most High, as there is a river of fire that proceeds from the throne in Revelation. There is a river of fire that flows from the throne in Daniel chapter 7, and you see the body of the beast burnt and destroyed in Revelation chapter 17 and cast into a lake of fire. You know, there's a vast subject when you get to the lake of fire, and there's some things about it that school's still out for me, but it looks to me like clearly the fulfillment of the wrath of God on the fallen system of this beast. And I think you could also find some of that verbiage articulated in the curses of Deuteronomy when he talked about the land would be full of burning and brimstone, like the fire and brimstone that fell on Sodom and Gomorrah. I'm not sure it's necessarily talking about some literal fire in the future. However, it really is dealing with a fulfillment of a fire that literally destroyed Jerusalem with fire and brimstone that came down that destroyed the city, and just like it did Sodom and Gomorrah. And so those are potentially things that you could kind of take a look at. I'm not dogmatic on those issues. The everlasting kingdom, then, is given in chapter 13. The beast has temporary authority, but Christ's everlasting kingdom will reign over all nations and tongues. That's pretty powerful stuff. Christ and his kingdom will reign over all nations and tongues. In chapter 17 of Revelation, the beast and Babylon are judged, but the Lamb's kingdom is eternal. The reign of the corrupt world system is brief. But in Daniel 7, he says the Son of Man is given everlasting dominion by the Ancient of Days, and all nations and peoples shall serve him. His kingdom will not pass away. And so you see, again, his everlasting kingdom is the bottom line is the Lamb wins. Even if I'm wrong, about all of these comparisons. And I think there's some striking resemblances here and a very strong argument for this being first century and this being the beast of Rome that has risen up out of the sea, that the end of the story is the Lamb and the saints win. The kingdom and the dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven will be given to the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom. Somebody asked me, said, "Brother Dr. House, don't you believe in a one-world government?" Yes, I do. It's the one that's on his shoulders. And of the increase of his government and peace, there will be no end. He was declared to be king 2,000 years ago. When he stood before the Ancient of Days, he was coronated as king. His kingdom has been increasing ever since through the sword of his mouth and through the saints of the Most High who continue to begin to exercise dominion. I think we've been robbed because we have forfeited our purpose and our assignment in the earth, and we've reserved to just go to heaven some glad morning. I need to finish this chart. The Ancient of Days is mentioned. The Ancient of Days is not mentioned necessarily in Revelation 13, although the Lamb, Christ, is present. The Eternal King judges the beast. In 17 of Revelation, there's no reference to the Ancient of Days. The focus is on the woman's judgment and Christ's victory, though still. The Ancient of Days appears rendering judgment in Daniel 7 on the beast and giving the kingdom to the saints and symbolizing God's ultimate sovereignty and judgment. In Revelation 13, the beast is given 42 months of power, symbolizing a limited time of tribulation before the final judgment and Christ's return. In Revelation 17, the beast and Babylon are part of the end-time rebellion against God facing imminent judgment. In Daniel chapter 7, the fourth beast, the little horn, represents end-time kingdoms, but the Ancient of Days intervenes with the final judgment and eternal dominion, and eternal dominion belongs to the saints. So you start to see that all of these beasts that you see in the book of Daniel are also strikingly resembled in the book of Revelation. I think there's some great comparisons there. The end of the story is the Lamb and the saints win. I trust you've enjoyed this segment. We are about out of time, but we need your help to be able to continue to do this, both with YouTube and with television. If you'd like to sow a seed into the ministry, the easiest way to do is go to my website. There's a place where you can give to our PayPal portal through your credit card or your debit card, and you could set up a monthly debit if you'd like to become a monthly partner. We do need monthly partners. You can also send a check or money order to the number that will come on the screen, or you can call the number on the screen and someone will take your call. If you don't get an answer, leave a message and we will call you back. God bless you.
For anyone struggling to understand John's writings in Revelation, this book provides true, biblically based answers. Through detailed insights into the letters John wrote to the seven churches of his day, you will learn how to avoid the mistakes of the early church to overcome today's trials and tribulations. This book will provoke you to thought and dialogue, bringing greater clarity and revelation of Jesus Christ.